Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to episode 18 of On Deck. I'm Bill. That's Lloyd. What's going on, Lloyd?
Not much, man. It's been a while. You know, I did a thing. I bought a game specifically for my Steam Deck, which I don't have yet. By the way, if anybody's wondering, I don't have a Steam Deck yet. I didn't get my email, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
I picked up Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker Saga, mainly as a game that I wanted to play on my Steam Deck because there are like 1,200... bricks to find and 300 characters and like all this stuff. I've played too much of it on my PC, so now I don't know if I'm gonna have a Steam Deck game. I might need another Steam Deck game for when I first get my Steam Deck because I'm impatient.
Yeah, that's awesome. I had asked on a previous episode if anybody had been playing Lego Star Wars, and I had like a bunch of people sent me Or they messaged me like a video of how to set it up, right? But then I saw other people saying, I used this video and the game keeps crashing. And so the thing is that game is unsupported, and there is a workaround using, I think it's called Glorious Egg Roll Proton. Okay, let's just jump into the show, I suppose. So GE Proton, Glorious Egg Roll, is the person who is forking Proton, and it allows some games to work even if they are incompatible. Okay. Uncompatible? Incompatible.
Incompatible.
Incompatible, yeah. Now, one of the games that it's supposed to work with is New World. So as a person who was very excited for New World and kind of stopped playing fairly quickly, but hey, I bought the damn thing, so I may as well try it out. I re-downloaded it. Man, I hate downloading games. I re-downloaded it and I set up the GE Proton, which, listen guys, I am not the tinkerer. I'm not. Setting up GE Proton was super, super easy. Super easy. It was basically you just download a flat pack on desktop mode, run it, and then go back into gaming mode, and it's there. And you can just select that as the Proton compatibility layer rather than the regular Proton compatibility layer. So I did that for New World, and it does not work. It says that it can't connect to the internet. Somebody sent me a message and they said, oh, we'll try this using like your mobile Wi-Fi hotspot. And I didn't try that, but I've heard that other people were able to try that and get it to work. But that just seems kind of goofy to me that that's the way to get that to work. but apparently that's how Lego Star Wars works, is through the GE Proton thing. It's supposed to make things work much better, which is great. I love that it's there and that it's an option. It's one of those things about PC gaming that I never really fully embrace, is the tinkering part of it. That being said, apparently it's going to work. Now, I have not bought Lego Star Wars, and I hesitate to buy it because I don't want to buy it and then have it not work and then have to go through the return process. And I don't like doing the return process too often. Especially because they told me it doesn't work. So buying it and then saying, well, it doesn't work, that just seems like I'm being a jerk. So I haven't bought it yet. Plus, I still have Borderlands. What the? Tiny Tina's Tiny that Tina's, I haven't had time to play. So I haven't bought it yet. But if I do, I will report back. But I'm sure that Lloyd will have his soon and be able to tell us all about it. Maybe by next episode.
Maybe. I got to say, I've been playing it completely by moonlight. So I've been playing it moonlight on my Android TV. I set up moonlight on my Mac. There's a Mac client. And where else did I try? I tried it on Apple TV. And I couldn't get it to show my Steam library for whatever reason. So that client wasn't working. But I've been using it on Android TV and on my Mac. And I've been playing the game completely that way, which is probably how I'm going to play the game when I get my Steam Deck. Because you did an interesting test where you were streaming a game instead of playing a game local. And you got like just oodles of hours compared to playing it like on bare hardware, on bare metal on your actual Steam Deck device.
Yeah. So that seems like a pretty good segue. Before we get to that, though, I want to say real quick thank you to our channel members. You know, you guys are amazing. We really do appreciate it. There's lots and lots of you. Stay awesome. We appreciate it. All right. So I've been playing. So when the Steam Deck first arrived, I installed Final Fantasy XIV. It's one of my favorite games. It's definitely one of my favorite MMOs, and it's kind of having this huge resurgence. Gabe Newell, when he was going around delivering his Steam Decks to people on day one, somebody asked him what he'd been playing. He said, "I've been playing Final Fantasy XIV. I'm playing a white mage. It's awesome. It works great." You look on Steam and it says unsupported. No problem. It still worked. Then Square changed the launcher. And if you are somebody who has Final Fantasy players know what I'm talking about, but you can have a PC account and you can have a Steam account. I have a Steam account. And if you have a Steam account, you can no longer log in. When you launch the launcher, it just pops up on the screen and it doesn't load the rest of the launcher. Why they did that, I have no idea. I'm very irritated by that, but that's neither here nor there. So my workaround is to play it via streaming. Now, I tried the Valve built-in streaming because it's a little less tinkery. I tried that. Didn't work so hot. First off, I saw that I was having all kinds of blurry, there was nasty, you couldn't read anything. And that's because they were taking the giant resolution and shrinking it down to your screen, and it made it really hard to read anything. Now, I talked about that, and people were like, "Oh, you know, you can change it so that it matches the resolution. So when you're playing your game, it sets it to 1280 by 800. And then sends it to your Steam Deck." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Well, I went into the settings. I found that setting. I made the change. Golden. It worked great. But really choppy and slow. So I just ended up going right back to Moonlight, which, if you don't know, is a way to stream games from your computer to your Steam Deck, or to lots of different devices.
Yeah, it's a client for the GeForce Experience, that if you have a particular NVIDIA card, mm-hmm. you can install the GeForce Experience. And one part of that software was allowing game streaming to your Shield TV Pro. Well, this is just a third-party client for that streaming service. And it works so good because mm-hmm. I've never really used Steam Link. Like, I had no interest in the past of playing a PC game on my TV. I was a console gamer. I was okay with that. So I tried setting up Steam Link initially, and fitting, I was playing a Lego game because it looked like the game was made out of individual parts of Lego, because the way that it does dithering on Steam Link, it's macro blocks heavy. So instead of just having like a crushed black with a bunch of macro blocks in it, it seems like everything was these individual squares. It looked like pixels that were made out of clear Lego blocks. And I'm like, "Well, this is fitting. I'm not going to play the whole game like this, but this is fitting." And then I set up Moonlight, and it was night and day. It's as good as streaming Stadia or GeForce Now to my devices. But running that GeForce Experience client thing, I'm surprised how well it works. And, well, I was originally, Bill, thinking of buying a terabyte SD card and preloading all my games. What I might end up doing is just loading a bunch of the games that I might play from time to time, just install them on my PC, because I have like a 4 terabyte drive. Just install them on my PC on the off chance that I want to play them, and then just the new or games that I always want to have with me, even when I'm traveling, games will be installed natively on my Steam Deck. I think I'm going to be doing a lot of this Moonlight streaming because it works surprisingly well, provided you're on the same Wi-Fi network.
Yeah. So on Steam, I think they just call it remote play. They don't actually call it Steam Link, but I still call it Steam Link because of the Steam Link. Anyway, on Steam Remote Play, if you go into Steam and then you go into the options, they do have enable hardware encoding. And that's an option that I had never seen before. And they do have NVIDIA GPUs, Intel iGPUs, and AMD GPUs, which I shouldn't have checked those other ones. I should just check my NVIDIA GPU. So you can check that. And I have to say, it was very crystal clear. Everything looked great. But as I was like running around in the game, it was just very choppy. And when I play it on Moonlight, I don't get any of that choppiness. It feels almost like I'm playing natively. You can see there's a little bit of softness to everything because you're streaming it and, you know, it's getting compressed on the PC and then it's getting decompressed or decoded on the deck. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a little softness, but when I'm holding the Steam Deck in a comfortable position, you can't really see that stuff all that much. And so comparing, you know, the reason we kind of got into this is because we were comparing battery life, comparing the battery life of Final Fantasy 14, which I can no longer test on deck because they made it so it doesn't work anymore. If you've got a, if, unless you do like crazy workarounds, which I won't bother to do. If you play it that way, like loaded on the deck, it chews through the battery much, much faster than when you are streaming it. Because when you're streaming it, I wasn't even at full percentage and I still had 5 hours of play. And that is very, very compelling. I know that there's a lot of people who are like, they give the deck a hard time about its shorter battery life. And I'm just going to say the same thing that I've said 1,000 times. It's a $400 portable playing brand new games. The battery life is not going to be fantastic. This is one workaround.
Yeah. The other workaround is a 25-foot USB-C cable that you can order off of Amazon. There you go. There's your workaround right there. But I joke, of course. But we've made fun of the fact that the USB-C port's on the top. But that actually makes playing it easier because if you're playing, if you're laying in bed or whatever and you're trying to put it down on you, if you have the USB thing on the bottom, that's going to like poke you in the belly. But it's on top, so you can just run a long cable to your charger and then you have unlimited power, which is really nice. I was going to do a movie quote, but I'm not going to go there. But it's amazing how well this works. And people are like, come on, you're talking about something that we've been using for 10 years. I get it. But this is new to me. And using Moonlight, and I poked around in Steam and finding the fact that I can use the NVIDIA HD Ink for encoding. I want to see if that makes any difference using the actual Steam Link app on my Apple TV or whatever. But this is going to be an amazing way for me to play these large games that I maybe only want to pop into every once in a while, like the No Man's Skies, the Lego, the Halo Master Chief Collection. Like, that would be another, obviously I'm not going to be playing that one, but if that would be the type of game I would do this for, because it's like 100 gigs to install. I don't want to put that on my Steam Deck. It operates surprisingly well, better than I thought it would, using that Moonlight software. So I'm, again, eagerly anticipating getting my Steam Deck in my hands so I can mess with this stuff myself.
Yeah, and I think that I haven't tried it, but I believe that when I first tried Moonlight, not on the deck, because I tried Moonlight before then, but I believe that if memory serves, that the first time that I tried Moonlight, I saw that there was an option to put your system online so that you could access it from outside of your own Wi-Fi area or your own network is what I mean to say. I had not tested that, but that could be also really compelling. And, you know, you talk about all the games that you don't want to install on your Steam Deck because they're too big, but there's another good reason that you would want to use this, and that's to play games that won't work on the Steam Deck. You 100%. Can still play them through that streaming. I will say that adding your games to the GeForce Experience software compared to just going into like just on the deck, just saying, oh, stream this game instead. that's a much worse experience, like going through and saying, okay, I want to play this game on my Steam Deck, so I'm going to go ahead and do that. And I complained about that at one point to somebody, and they said, well, you could just have it load your desktop and then you could load a game from there. And that's true. But sure. Another benefit that the built-in streaming has on Deck is that every game has its own controller configuration. When I install Moonlight, it just has one controller configuration. That's the controller configuration for Moonlight. And so that means I can't use all of the cool, crazy things. Like if I wanted to play, I don't know, a game where like, what's the word? What's the game I'm trying to think of? Oblivion. If I wanted to play Oblivion, does not support controller. So I would have to go through and make a second Oblivion. Control scheme.
Right.
Under Moonlight. And then it just kind of becomes kind of a pain. Of course, I could just install Oblivion on the Deck. So maybe that's not the best example. But you guys get what I'm saying, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's definitely going to be super handy for me, as I said, for the really large games, or like you said, games that don't work natively on the Deck. It's a viable alternative, because I was starting to think, like, I have a bunch of games on Epic Games Store and GOG and all the other game clients that you have, Origin and et cetera, and I know there's workarounds, and I've seen people talk on the subreddit that you can install this, and we're even going to be talking about something right away that will allow you to do that. It all seems like a big kludgy workaround right now, and it's not going to be like that forever, but for the foreseeable future, this might be a way to get around that. You install your apps, you manually add them to GeForce Experience so that they'll load and do it that way. I got to do a lot more playing around to see if that is even a possibility. But it takes the openness of the Steam Deck, something that we've praised here since episode one, how open the hardware is, how open Valve is, how open the software is. And it just gives you another use case that you wouldn't have on another piece of hardware from another company, because they wouldn't want you to be doing this. They want to have a lockdown ecosystem. They want it to be the same experience for user one that it is for user 3 million. They want everything to be locked down as much as possible. Valve is just like, it's just a PC. Have fun. Do what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to do is install Moonlight and play a bunch of my games that way.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's move on to the comments that we got from previous episodes. Thank you guys so much for sending those in. Before we get there, though, if you're one of the first people here watching this episode, then pay attention to the screen, because some point during the episode, I'm going to put a Steam code as like just a thank you for being one of the first people here. So keep an eye out for that. Sometime during the show, I will drop that down onto the lower third or something. You'll see a code, you can put it in on Steam, and you get yourself a free game. I don't even know what game it's going to be yet. It's just something that Lloyd and I are going to try and do from time to time. All right, comments from you guys. First comment was from Michael Vunk. He says, for the keyboard, I'd like to be able to use the triggers as a click and use the other buttons as different functions like caps lock and backspace. I think that would avoid the issues you mentioned. So what they're referring to is we recently got dual trackpad typing as a new way of input typing on the Steam Deck. And boy, I hate dual trackpad typing on the Steam Deck. It feels super terrible. And one of the things that I said is on the Steam controller, they had dual trackpad typing, and you would slide your thumb around. And then when you had your thumb over the letter that you wanted to input, you pulled the trigger. You, like, if it was my right thumb, you pull the right trigger, left thumb, left trigger. It was okay. I never really got used to it. I know that there's a lot of people that love it. I'm not one of them. They kind of brought that into the Steam Deck as an option. It's optional. I can still just reach over and tap on the screen. My brain keeps trying to like the dual trackpad typing, and I can't figure it out. But I had said, why don't we have the ability to use the triggers to do that? Because the way that they were doing it is you had to move your thumbs around and push on the trackpad, which meant when you go to push down on the trackpad, where the little circle where your thumb is might move a little, and now you input the wrong letter. Well, Valve was listening, and they updated it, and they put in the triggers. They're so fast. I think since the last episode, they did 4 changes to the keyboard. Where they added the one thing, and then they added another thing, and then they added another thing, and then they did like a bug fix. Like, so fast with their iteration on the keyboard. So the thing that Michael Vunk is saying here is absolutely what they did. They did do that. And they gave you a slider to adjust how fast the trackpad moves. I can't use it. It's unusable for me. I did try and turn off the haptics, and they didn't turn off, so I'm not sure what's happening there, but... Did you never use the dual trackpad typing on the Steam controller, did you?
No, never, never. I've never used a Steam controller, so this will all be new to me. It seems like it would be super intuitive, but I could also see that it would take a lot of time to train your brain around it. Like, instead of just typing, you're moving your thumbs around and then clicking with the triggers. It does seem like you could do pretty fast typing when you get used to it, but it's that learning curve that's going to take a little while to get there.
Boy, Valve always had these weird input methods where they were trying to solve this problem of inputting text on a controller. Did you ever see their, I think they called it like the flower wheel?
Yes, I remember that. I remember the jokes about that. There's a lot of webcomics that made fun of it. That's more what I remember about that.
I tried using it. I couldn't figure it out. I thought it was very clever, though. And I guarantee that there are people who can type like 90 words per minute using that thing. I am not one of them. I'm just going to stick with tapping the touch screen or using the D-pad because that works well for me. And I'm not typing very much. So I spend more time fixing my errors with the dual trackpad typing than I would if I just do it slower and input things with the D-pad or touching the touch screen. All right, Lloyd, you talked earlier about emails. This is big because Valve had said we're ramping up production. And there's been a million jokes like on the subreddit where people are like, Valve found a way to get us to look forward to Mondays. Well, now we can look forward to other days. You want to tell people about this? I say as he takes a drink of his coffee.
Yeah, of course. So they said that when they were getting into Q2, they're like, okay, we have a better hand on what we're doing here as far as the number of products that we can make in a week and the amount of logistics we can do to get them shipped out. So we're gonna double up on weeks that we have the ability to. We're gonna send out an email on Monday, but also on Thursday. It's not a guarantee that Thursday email is gonna be every week, but this is what we're gonna try. So you have 2 days to look forward to. So now I have 2 days where I obsessively check my spam folder. I know there's no reason to do it because I'm going to get a pop-up in my Steam client, but my brain is like, but it might be in spam. You have to check spam 50 times a day. Now I'm going to be doing that on 2 days out of the week as we get closer to me hopefully getting my email in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and everybody else as well. Like, now that the Steam Decks are in the wild, Lloyd and I were kind of joking about this before the show. The subreddit used to be like a really useful place to go find news, and now it's just a sea of pictures of people with their Steam Decks. Like, hey, look, here's a Steam Deck sitting on a table. Here's one, you know, next to some Easter eggs. Here's one doing this thing and doing that thing. And I was like, okay, I'm so happy that people got them. But it does make it hard to find the news now. But a lot more people are getting them. We have a community Discord. There's a link in the description down below. I think that one of our mods just mentioned that she got hers and like it arrived and she's been playing on it and everything. So more and more people are getting them. And the response has been really, really good. I think it was The Verge just put out an article. Like, I saw Lawrence Yang retweet it. Lawrence Yang works at Valve, by the way. And it was like, the Steam Deck is not a flop. And he replied, phew, you know, which was great. It's just getting such high praise. And it even Even MKBHD, who is a lot of people don't know who he is, but he's like one of the biggest tech YouTubers. If you're only into gaming, you probably would not have ever heard of him. But he recently posted his review of the Steam Deck. And he said, I can't recommend this to a lot of people, but everyone that I would recommend it to would have an absolute blast with it. And right. That seems to be the theme for the Steam Deck, is that the people who are going to get this thing are going to love it. But so far, it's still not a super polished console, super console-like experience. And Valve never said that it was.
Right.
I am somebody who likes a console-like experience, and there are rough edges that bug me with this thing. But that being said, it's an awesome, awesome device. And Valve is going to keep making these things. There's no way that we're not going to see a Steam Deck 2. This thing is going to be super, super successful because it's just, it's different. I've said it a million times, different things to different people.
And it's, even if Valve tomorrow said, you know what, we made a mistake. We're not doing this anymore. We're not selling these things anymore. We're going to continue. Everybody that's ordered it right now is going to get their Steam Deck, but then we're stopping. This device is going to live on for years with all the hobbyists, because people are 3D printing back cases that can hold an eGPU. Like, they're putting like the craziest of crazy things that you ever thought people would do. They're doing it right now. This is going to be a device that is going to live forever, even if Valve decided at the end of this year to stop production. It's struck a tone with a lot of hobbyists, a lot of computer tech hobbyists, a lot of gamers, a lot of people that are kind of a mixture of the two of those. It's a device that is hitting on multiple avenues for different people. So even if you're not a gamer, there is a valid reason to want to have a Steam Deck as a portable computer, and a valid reason to want to use it as a thing to do graphic design on and a thing to do video editing on. Like, there's viable ways to use this that aren't just playing video games, and it's going to live on because of that. But man, does it ever play video games really well. So that's the cool thing about it.
Absolutely. And Valve is never going to stop with SteamOS. They want to get Windows out from being the overlord of gaming. And the only way to do that is through Linux, really. And so right. Valve is just going to keep doing SteamOS. So even if they decided tomorrow we're not going to do hardware anymore, mm-hmm. SteamOS is free, and you can just install it on your devices. And so other companies that want to make these portable hardware devices, you know, I've said before, it's tough for these other companies to find a way to compete with Valve, because Valve has the benefit of making 30% on every game that's sold
right.
through SteamOS, and these other companies don't. But these other companies, you know, a thing that I was often overlooking is that these other companies that might make a portable gaming device, they're already doing that, and they're not making 30%. On every sale, and they're making enough money to do it. Now, can they get it as cheap as the Steam Deck? I don't think so. But you look at eBay, people are willing to pay a lot of money for portable gaming. And like, even Gabe Newell said that they were surprised that the best-selling version was the 512, because that's the most expensive version. And so right. I can see these other companies saying, you know what, we're not going to have to buy a Windows license anymore. We can mm-hmm. just get SteamOS on our device. And if we do that, then we can save money, and maybe we can make our devices a little bit cheaper and more attractive sure. To the other customers.
Yeah. Like if you have the $400 mini portable Windows PC or the $400 one, if they can lop $50 off the cost because they don't have to put an OEM Windows license on it, I mean, that's a huge savings in comparison to the whole entire price of that device. So that's going to be that's going to be good for a lot of these manufacturers. If they can either keep the price the same and actually start making profit on these things, if they can drop the price by $30, $20, $25, whatever it is, that's going to give them new customers potentially. So yeah, SteamOS succeeding is good for the entire games industry. And it's really interesting to see developers saying, hey, well, because of the Steam Deck, I have a Linux native version of my game right now. It runs fine. You can just download it natively in Steam to your device. And you're going to get a lot more of that stuff, probably more so from the indie devs than the AAA, big AAA multi-platform devs. But enough of those people making that change is going to start putting some upwards pressure on these big AAA devs to, hey, why don't you make the Steam Deck version run better? Or why don't you make the Steam OS version run better? Because I have this 1080p or 4K screen with controls on the side that I use as a big switch with my full wingspan. I want to play that game on this device. Hopefully we're going to start to get that upward pressure on these AAA devs to make sure that their games run really well, either through Proton, a compatibility layer, or with a Linux native version with all their anti-cheat stuff running natively on Linux as well.
Well, okay, this isn't in the show notes, but it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, and I don't know if we want to tackle it today or if we want to save it for a future episode, but maybe we'll do like a bite-sized quick discussion of it, and maybe we'll do a full-fledged version of this later on.
Sure.
What do you think the effect of Proton is on native Linux development? So you're a game developer, Lloyd, and you decide to make your game, and you have the choice. I can make a Linux native version to target the Steam Deck, or I can just make my Windows version to get it working on the Steam Deck. So now are you less likely to make a Linux native version for your game?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question right now. I think for a lot of people, just using Proton is going to be good enough because they're getting free additional platforms that this game can run on. It's technically the same platform, it's Steam, but it's a new class of hardware that you don't have to recompile your game for, change any of the code for, and it will just run. But then you're also going to see like Falconeer Dev. He decided to come right out, and I'm blanking on his name, Thomas something, I think. Sorry, I'm terrible with names, so it's not that I don't want to remember your name, it's that I physically can't remember your name, so apologize there. He decided to, hey, well, I'm working on the sequel to Falconeer, let's just see how long it takes to make a Steam version or a Linux version. And he had it running in Linux in like a day. And he's like, wow, this worked really good. Hey, I'm going to play with some VR stuff. Oh, I'm going to play with this. And it just allows these developers that have the cycles, have the time in their schedule, or if they're on a lull between projects, to say, hey, let's see how this works. Because the worst case scenario is it's still going to run on Proton, but the best case scenario is maybe I can make it run better if we just do the recompiling to run as a Linux native binary. So I think you're going to get the smaller devs that are really going to push forward with Linux native versions, as a lot of them already have been. Like the number of games that I have in my Steam library that run on Linux, run on macOS, and run on Windows is a not insignificant percentage of my Steam library. I can see that growing now, and mainly because of Proton, because now the devs are like, hey, my game runs on this device. Oh, it's doing this weird bug, and I remember that bug. Hey, let's see if we can't make a Linux native version of it and see if that bug goes away. So, yeah, I don't have a... I think I answered it five different ways there, Bill, which means it's probably good for a bigger talk in a future episode. But I think it's going to have multiple impacts. First of, the games are just going to work for most people, and that's going to be great for a lot of devs. And there's going to be a lot of devs that are perfectionists that are going to say, I don't like the way it runs, I'm going to make a Linux native version of it.
You know, that's absolutely a valid answer with the multiple answers. I want to know what you guys think in the comment section down below. Let us know, do you think that Proton will have a negative effect on the number of games that are made for Linux natively? I don't know. Lloyd and I will revisit this topic again in the future, and maybe we'll incorporate some of your comments. Speaking of of Linux itself, Lutris, which I know people are like, I've known about Lutris forever. Okay. I don't do anything on Linux. Like, I tried Linux back in, like, I don't know, 98, and I was confused, and so I never went back to it. But there's this new app, there's this app called Lutris, which will basically take all of the different launchers, the Bethesda launcher, although that one doesn't make much sense because they're ditching their launcher and going with Steam anyway. The EA launcher, the Origin, EA is Origin, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Origin. Anyway, a bunch of launchers like the Heroic launcher and stuff like that. And they're bringing them all into this one app in order to make it easier for you to play your games that are not supported on Linux through Proton on the Steam Deck and probably on other Linux machines as well. Now, in order to get this to run on the Deck, you do have to go into your settings and make your OS not read-only. Right now, as it stands, the operating system, SteamOS 3.0 or whatever, 3.0, whatever it is now, is read-only, which means you cannot change it. But Valve, being the way that they are, they said you can uncheck a box and mess with things if you want. So basically you can say, make it read and write, make this change, and then recheck that box afterwards, which is awesome that you can do that. And then you would have Lutris, which will allow you to play games from all of these other launchers. Like you were saying before, Lloyd, you have a bunch of games that you've got. Like, I think you and I've talked about this before. You fire up the Epic Games Store like every week, claim your games, and then close it again.
I have a reminder on my phone, so every Thursday at noon it says go get your free games, and then on the 15th it says go get your Xbox games, and on the 1st it says there's more Xbox, also there's some PlayStation games, etc. I have a vast collection of games that I've never played, nor do I ever intend on playing, so maybe this will help with that.
That's right. He'll get Lutris installed and then he won't have to do it on his PC. He'll just claim the games and never play them.
And I'll be like, look at all these games I'm never going to play. This is amazing. Thanks, Lutris. And then I'll disable it and go back to, like, I don't know, Minecraft Dungeons or Skyrim or whatever game I'm playing at the time.
Or maybe Back 4 Blood. Blood was just updated to work on Deck. It's still, if you look at the store, it still says unsupported. It won't run. That's not true. The devs actually said, hey, we have added this. So I guess what the Easy Anti-Cheat has this file called, I think it's Easy Anti-Cheat _64.so. And when publishers put that file into the game, that signals that they are getting ready to allow Easy Anti-Cheat on Linux. And so I saw that tweet, or maybe it wasn't a tweet. I saw it someplace. It was Linux Gaming for Linux. Sorry. It was gamingonlinux.com. Right. I saw this posted. It's from the developers. They've said this. And so this was this morning. I downloaded it and I launched it and the game launches. So it does work. Even though it says that it's unsupported. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Master Chief Collection that recently got that .so file as well. So I think that we will be getting support for the Master Chief Collection on Deck, in the near future, maybe even by the time you guys watch this. Have you played Back for Blood, Lloyd?
I haven't. I got it. Wasn't this part of one of the big bundles? So I was super excited. I'm like, oh, I love Left 4 Dead. I can't wait to play this on the Deck. And then I look in my what's the app? Check my Deck report, and it's like unsupported. I'm like, no, that's one of the games I really wanted to play. Although I could probably install it and play through Moonlight on my PC if I really wanted to. But yeah, I'm really, really excited to check all that out. And we've talked about this previously on the show that a lot of the developers of anti-cheat software were trying to make it easy to do Steam Deck versions of your game. And we've even talked about this where you just have to make one little change to an INI file, essentially, and will load the Proton version of that easy anti-cheat library. Looks like that is indeed the case here, which is pretty fantastic.
Now, I will say that, like, because the devs have been talking about this, they're the ones that said, hey, this we're working on this. I felt like, okay, I'm fine doing this. Like, be careful, because you could get your account for whatever game that you're playing banned if you are trying to get around their rules. So, like, for instance, Destiny said, if we catch you trying to be shady, we're going to shut down your account. Now, that probably, maybe, you know, I personally think that's like an overreaction, but like, if you are, you know, maybe somebody goes out and finds that .so file and like you drag it into your file structure for the game that you want to play, and then the game launches, but the devs didn't say that, you're kind of skating on thin ice and you might get your account banned. So just be careful with that and make sure that the devs are cool with it before you do that, because you don't want to lose access to your account, especially if it's a game that you had to buy. Like, this is not a free to play game. I didn't pay for it. Well, I paid for it through the Ukraine bundle. Yep. But like, I didn't pay full price for it. So I have not played it yet, because it's 36 gigs or whatever. And I had to download it this morning, and I launched it and it worked. And then I shut it off because we were getting ready to record the show. So, I'll report back next episode. And I do think it's crossplay and it's on Game Pass. So Lloyd, we could actually try and play together at some point, though you still don't have the deck. You know, maybe he'll have one by Thursday.
Please. I hope so.
All right. Okay. This one I had no idea about. Valve put out this video saying, these are all the things that we did in the month since the Steam Deck launched. And I was watching, I was like, okay, knew about all that. And then they said something very interesting. They said, by the way, if you hold down the Steam button or the quick access button, you can do all of these shortcuts. And I knew that about the Steam button. But the thing is like, so like, let's say that I'm playing a game and it's got very small text on Steam Deck. What you can do is you can hold down the Steam button and the left bumper in order to turn on the screen magnifier, which makes sense, but that's a weird combination to try and reach with your thumb and your finger at the same time. You can do the same thing with the quick access menu. So you can hold down the quick access menu and it does all of the same things that the Steam button does, which is very, very cool. I had no idea about that. And I just wanted to tell people, because I think that it's not obvious that you would try that.
Sure. Yeah. I love that. Hey, we used to do Nintendo. Well, you used to do a Nintendo focused show. I've been doing a Nintendo show forever. One of the things about Nintendo is they're slow. Their changes to their OS takes forever, and it gets stable every month or two, weirdly enough, but it doesn't actually get new features. But then you see the Steam Deck and they're pushing out major like updates that add new functionality or fix bugs, or like adding, oh, you didn't like the game overlay, well, now there's another tick that you can choose, which just puts it at the top with just the frames. That's really what you wanted, right? Like little things like that that would take Nintendo 18 years to add to the Switch OS is just, I don't know, midway through a week you get a patch of your device and this is a new feature. It's actually quite refreshing to see a big corporation kind of treat their device as open source software with frequent updates, because you don't really get that on a piece of hardware that you spent actual real money for. This is something like if you're like into the Raspberry Pi and you're doing like a Retro Pi or one of the other collections of emulators or other software, there's frequent updates there, but those are just a bunch of hobbyists working on a piece of hobby software. This is a physical piece of hardware that people paid good money for from a large gaming corporation, and they're treating it the same way, which means that the Steam Deck is going to get better, and it's going to get better quickly, which is a very exciting thing for me.
Also means that they'll probably get some bugs, some like like when I was talking about the keyboard typing and I turned off haptics and it still has haptics. Not sure what's happening there, but it's probably because they're iterating so quickly. Whereas, you know, you mentioned Nintendo, Nintendo does everything slowly because they know it's going to work when it comes out.
That's right.
Although, you know, some would say the Bluetooth support on the Nintendo Switch, which took them 4 years to implement, was not all that great. So maybe, maybe there's something to be said for doing things faster and getting feedback from a larger number of people very, very quickly. Speaking of feedback, I don't know if we talked about this on last episode. I know that I talked about it. When you are playing a game that is verified and then you finish playing that game, there's now a pop-up. You can turn these off if you want to, but you shouldn't. You should help out. The community is going to make the experience on deck better. But there's a little pop-up that happens just below, like, the logo banner of the game or something, and it'll say, did this meet your expectations for being verified or something? I think that this is fantastic. Lloyd, you have any thoughts on this real quick?
For someone that's been playing a lot of cloud gaming over the last number of years, I'm used to these pop-ups. It seems like every time you end a game session, it's like, how was your session? And you choose a quick star rating. For Valve to be doing this makes total sense. People are used to these little feedback things. The fact that you can turn it off is good for the people that are really vocal about being annoyed at pop-ups. They could just turn it off. But for the rest of us, this is going to be good. And it's also going to be really good for games that are unplayable, according to Steam, or games that are that have the yellow icon instead of a green icon. They're going to keep asking questions. Did the text bother you? Has this changed? Being able to directly query the end user for this type of information is going to be huge. And it's going to go a long way to helping Valve rate the 1 billion games that are currently listed in Steam. No amount of humans could do that in a normal amount of time. But crowdsourcing everybody to say, hey, we noticed that you played this unplayable game. How was the experience? And if you say it was good, then that can be added to the queue to get verified and then push these games up the list to get their green or yellow check marks. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, back to Back for Blood. I'm curious why Back for Blood. I'm curious back why for Back for Blood is still listed as playable, because that's kind of a big game, you know?
It is.
And it's listed as not playable, unsupported. It's currently listed as unsupported, even though the devs have said, go ahead, we put in the thing, the easy anti-cheat works. It's odd to me that a big game like that didn't get a quick turnaround on the verification status update, because like that's probably costing them money right now.
So it's that patch came out on the 13th, it looks like, which is Wednesday. Yeah. So maybe because of the holidays, maybe everything was shut down. I wonder what the process is, because I've seen Valve talk about this, like developers can request their game to get rated or re-rated. I wonder what the lag on that is. But you'd think a game like Back for Blood, made by the devs of Left 4 Dead, the original developers trying to bring this type of game back to the masses, would have maybe a little bit of weight behind it. Maybe they just hit the whole Easter weekend shutdown thing, and maybe bright and early Monday, Tuesday morning, we'll have an update to their playability inside the Steam client.
All right, moving on, let's talk about playability. I want to talk about Jurassic World Evolution 2. So for those of you that don't know, I put out a video about how to use mouse regions in order to play real-time strategy games on the deck, where basically a mouse region, watch the video if you haven't, because it explains it better than this, but I'm going to go super fast. You touch the trackpad, and you can set an area of the screen that your mouse is then locked to and can't leave that little area, so that you can quickly get to an area of the screen in order to interact with the game in some way. I did a much better job on the full video, so make sure you guys check that out if you haven't. I'll make sure that there's a link in the description. Somebody had mentioned, boy, I wonder how Jurassic World Evolution 2 is. And I happen to have that game. I didn't really think of that as a real-time strategy game, so I didn't use that as an example. I think of that more as like a world-building sim kind of game. I haven't played much of it, so maybe I'm wrong about that. But I decided, all right, I'm going to install that on the deck. So I installed it. And then I went into the graphics settings because I want to say, okay, what can I change in order to get the optimal frame rate or whatever? They have a Steam Deck profile. Yeah, profile. They have a Steam Deck profile built in to the game. So it like recognized that it was a Steam Deck. They have gone through and figured out what they say is the best experience. And so I was getting somewhere around 40 frames per second or something like that. And this isn't a game where you have to have like super good aim or anything like that. So I said, that seems about right. And then I just put on the frame limiter down to 30. And now I have a stable 30 frame rate, 30 frames per second frame rate, using the dev's, profile that they decided on was the best, for the Steam Deck. And this is not the only game that I've seen that on. I think that we're going to see a lot more of these, and I wish that Valve would do something to encourage them to encourage more devs to do it. Of course, they have the Great on Deck, but there's a lot of games that I've played that are Great on Deck that don't have that Steam Deck profile, and I have to be the schlub that goes in and is like, oh, I'm going to turn down this kind of anti-aliasing, which I don't really know what that stuff is anyway, and I'm going to turn this up, and I keep doing all this instead of playing the actual game. And
right.
I know there's a lot of people that love doing that. I'm not one of those. I do it in order to get a good experience, but it would be really nice if the devs would do that. Do you think that there's a, what kind of incentivization system do you think Valve could do in order to get devs to make a profile that gives people a solid experience on deck?
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the big stumbling blocks for the next little while is developers, going back to your earlier question, are they going to be happy with just Proton support, or are they going to be doing a Linux native version? I think a lot of developers are going to go out there and say, well, the community has come together and said, this is the profile to use. We're just going to defer to the community. They're the ones playing the games. But it would be really nice to have... by default, like we talked early on in the show, it'd be nice if you downloaded a new game, like the best game ever. You bought it, you paid your $20, you download the best game ever. It would be nice that it noticed that you were downloading on a Steam Deck to only download the 1080p assets instead of the 4K assets. Mm-hmm. That it immediately set up the proper profile, that it did all of the Steam Deck-y things, which I don't have one, so I don't know what those are yet, other than doing some reading. That it would do all those Steam Deck-y things just in the initial download. And I think we'll come to that place where every game in the future, every new game in the future will come with a Steam Deck profile, because Valve says, if you do this, this, and this, you get a nice, little icon on your store listing saying that you're verified for Steam Deck. And maybe it's more than the little green check mark. Maybe it's like a green check mark with a little gold thing around it.
Oh, yes.
They could do something to say that, yes, the developer has gone the extra step to make it work better. We've tested it. We say it works, but here is the developer saying that they did their best to make it work on the Steam Deck. That could be something that could come down the road if Valve is noticing that this type of, I don't know, customization is lagging from the developers. They could say, hey, well, if you do this, we'll get you another little check mark on your Steam store listing. A lot of people love those little gold check marks. So maybe that would force the developers to go and to make those updates.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the community. And like I said before, the community is like one of the greatest assets that Valve has, because they can, they can give a lot of input. Boy, oh boy, the controls, like the Steam input controls from the community, that could be really, really great. But quite often when I launch a game, it says using the official profile. And I'm always like, oh, these guys, these devs went nuts, and they went in and used the official stuff for the Steam Deck in order to get things work. No, they didn't. Like an official profile is that they went and copied some user's version. In fact, I can't remember what game it was, but I launched a game and it says using the official profile. And then when I went into Steam input, it said the official profile, and then it was named after some user who had made that profile and uploaded it. And then the devs said, you made that? I made that. And then they just basically took it, slapped their name at the end, which is fine. They gave credit, but still, it wasn't a very good profile. Like, it said right. that it had an official profile, but in my opinion, it was terrible. So I deleted it and made my own control Steam input profile from scratch, which was much better, in my opinion. But hey, it's mine, so I can have my opinion. I think that controls and bespoke Steam Deck profiles for like video settings, those two things are very, very important, because while I know that there's a lot of people that watch this show that love the tinkering aspect of it, mm-hmm. I think the Valve keeps calling it a PC. They do. But a lot of people look at this thing and they say, oh, that just looks like a Nintendo Switch. That should behave like a Nintendo Switch. And then when they get that verified game and it's running at 20 frames per second on the default settings, that doesn't yep. feel good. So the default settings should detect that it's a Steam Deck and, you know, do something about that. But, yeah. you know, it's definitely something that you can adjust in order to make it better. I just wish it was more out of the box like Jurassic World Evolution 2 was.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the Steam Deck is a month old, essentially, give or take a few days on each end. This will probably get better. And I know Valve is probably going to work towards that. It'll take some time, but man, the what we have right now a month in is way different than what we had at launch. And I'm very excited for what it's going to look like when I get mine in my hands.
And speaking of, you know, a month in, there are 2,000 games that are either verified or playable yeah. using Valve's little system on deck. 2,000 yeah. in a month.
That's crazy.
That's absolutely nuts. And, you know, I mentioned a second ago, somebody looks at this and they say, oh, it's like a Nintendo Switch. I pick up my Nintendo Switch, which I have hardly touched since I got the Steam Deck. And holding this thing in my hand, it is a terrible experience ergonomically.
Right.
The Nintendo Switch ergonomics are just awful compared to the Steam Deck. And I cannot get over, I don't know why I turned that on. I cannot get over how much better this is to yeah. hold in your hands than it is to use the Switch. I don't know if I will ever use my Switch in portable mode again.
Yep.
I might just dock it and get out my Pro Controller and never play in portable mode again after this. Unless I get one of those. They got those chonky controllers that looks like someone sawed a yeah. Pro Controller in half and slapped it on the ends. I might get one of those.
Yeah, those are really good. Yeah, it like the Switch really, it's only comfortable to hold because it's so damn light. Like if the Switch was as heavy as the Steam Deck, I don't think it would be anywhere near as comfortable as it is now. And it's not super comfortable playing your Switch in portable mode. From what I can tell, for everybody that I've talked to that has a Steam Deck, they're like, this thing is so comfortable. It feels like it should be top heavy. It should weigh you down, but it doesn't. They balanced it. Everybody says, I wish there was a bigger battery in there. Yeah, me too. I wish there was like a battery that's three times the size, but that would have added more weight. It might have unbalanced the device depending on where they have to put the cells on it. Mm-hmm. What they did is they fit a lot of horsepower into such a small device, and they did a really good job doing that for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, cue up the Thanos meme of perfectly balanced as all things should be. I oftentimes yeah. I'm sitting on the little couch that I have over there, and I will be playing a game on Steam Deck. And I'll be like, oh, I got to send a quick text or something. And I got the arm of the couch right here next to me. And I always set, this is stupid. I don't know why I do this because it's going to end up falling and breaking. But I set the Steam Deck right on the arm of the couch. And it just, it balances there. And it doesn't tip either way. It's a pretty narrow arm of the couch. It's not like the curve of the Steam Deck is going around and holding onto it properly. But I just set it right in the middle. And it balances. Huh. This thing is perfectly balanced. So, you know, cue Thanos with the knife.
I was going to say proof. The Steam Deck was designed by Thanos. We now know where it came from. This is amazing.
There we go. All right. Another game that I've been playing on deck recently is Evoland. Lloyd, have you ever played Evoland?
I have not. I've seen the icon a million and one times because it's very... it looks very Legend of Zelda, Zelda-y. So I've like, I'm going to like that game, but I've never played it. I think I'm pretty sure I own it on Steam, though.
Okay. If you own it on Steam, you absolutely need to play this game. And if you have a Steam Deck, it plays great on deck. Evoland is this really awesome journey through gaming history. So when you first start playing, you only have one button. That is the right button on the D-pad. You can only move to the right. So you walk to the right and you open up a chest, and that chest unlocks left. So now you can walk right and left. You walk to the left and there's another chest over there, and that unlocks the rest of the D-pad. So then as you are walking, now you can walk in four different directions. You open up a chest and it opens up scrolling. So now, as you are moving along, it goes to the next page, like the original Legend of Zelda, where when you get to the top of the screen, the whole world shifts down and now you're at the bottom of the screen and you go up, and then you go a little bit further and you unlock smoother scrolling. And then it's more like Zelda Link to the Past, where the character stays in the middle and the world kind of moves around them as you move. And then you keep moving, you get to the overworld, and then you unlock turn-based battles instead of like Zelda-based battles, and you keep going through the history of RPGs. Eventually, you unlock 3D gaming through this game. So you open a chest, and now the world is in 3D instead of in 2D. So it's this really, really cool like journey through. It's supposed to be pretty short. We'll see if I have the attention span to finish it. Spoilers, probably not. but it's really cool, and it works great on deck, and it looks beautiful on that screen. And it's a very, very cool game, and I wanted to recommend it to people. Lloyd, you're gonna like this one.
I've wishlisted the Legendary Edition because it looks like that comes with essentially the first two games, Evoland 1 and 2. Yeah, it looks really good. One of my original game ideas back in the day was kind of like this, but it was a platformer. So I wanted a platformer where you're like a stick figure, or you're just a dot, and then you go through and you get turned into like an 8-bit platformer, then a 16-bit platformer, and then all the way up into like a full 3D one. And I worked on this with buddies like 15, 20 years ago. I wish I would have brought it to market, because it would have been the platformer of Evoland, I guess.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of On Deck. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. If you stuck through this whole episode, you probably enjoyed it. Make sure you click on that like button down below. It really does help us out a lot. And of course, subscribe, turn on notifications, all that stuff, so you can see live streams from us or other videos that we put out. We really do appreciate you guys hanging out with us. And if you're like, what did you keep talking about YouTube stuff? I'm listening to the podcast. Yeah, it's a podcast, but it's also a YouTube channel. So head on over to youtube.com/nerdnest. And if you're watching us on YouTube, then check out the podcast in your favorite podcatcher. Just look for On Deck wherever you listen to podcasts already.
Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely check out all the content. Bill's been putting up just a ridiculous amount of Steam Deck content, which is great. Go check all that stuff out. He's done just an amazing job with his Steam Deck.
Have a good one, everybody. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Take it easy, folks.